So first of all, just a little read on the room. Who would consider themselves a novice in blockchain? Okay, a few hands. Who knows enough to be dangerous? A lot of dangerous people. Who is being dangerous? Who is actually, okay, well, somebody is one dangerous. So that means who's actually deploying a use case. All right. Well, so I'm going to try to get everybody sort of a degree of peace in that in the crawl, walk, run progression of this technology, we're really still in the honey, I think my water broke stage. So even at IBM, have a few babies and some poopy diapers, but still what I'm going to try to do today is sort of give you an idea of where this technology is headed, particularly in M&E and specifically around advertising. Just one note, so I'm a global solutions leader for advertising at IBM. Last year, there was this kind of and blockchain that got added, and it was in very fine print, and that print just kept growing until it just absorbed everything else. So the last couple months, 100% of my time has been dedicated, based on demand, to blockchain. So I want to first start off with a story about David Sarnoff. Anybody in the room know who David Sarnoff was? Okay. He immigrated to the States from Russia at the age of 9 in 1906, penniless. At the age of 15, he started working for the Marconi Wireless Telegraph Corporation of America. And he was sort of, started to implement this new technology. It was kind of a replacement of the traditional telegraph lines, permutation of doing that wirelessly. Started to take hold in trains and ships. And around the time of 1915 or so, he started to write memos saying, hey, there's this peer-to-peer kind of one-to-one thing going on. What if we started to broadcast? What about one-to-many? Wouldn't that be cool? And his boss was just saying, shut up. You're just an errand boy. But he kind of rose up to be a manager. And then RCA, which had a number of patents around radio, bought the company around 1920. In 1921, he kept, again, was very passionate about this idea of this new medium of radio and its possibilities. And he started telling his bosses, hey, there's a heavyweight fight coming up. We should broadcast the heavyweight fight. And his bosses said, no, it's just an incremental change. We're going to do what we do around news, but we're going to do that on the radio. That's the possibility of this medium. He said, no, trust me. Let me do this. Let me broadcast the fight. So they broadcast the fight. Anybody who had a radio, everybody, the neighborhoods conglomerated, 300,000 people listened to that fight. And that winter, this was in July, that winter, the explosion of radio happened. It never looked back. David Sarnoff became he ran RCA all the way through the age of 79 into 1970. He kind of pioneered the same thing, repeated the analog in television. But the point here is that sometimes it's not about the way that the technology worked previously and porting it over, it's about thinking about new possibilities. So keep that in mind as we progress here. So we're gonna cover three things. We're gonna cover what blockchain is. We're also gonna focus on what is not. And then we're going to end with what it's going to do specifically around advertising. We might get into a little bit sort of implications on other M&E use cases. So what is blockchain? So first of all, I'm going to draw a distinction before we get to the chart here between a private and a public blockchain. I'm assuming I'm case in point here. Most of you probably first heard about blockchain around Bitcoin. Is that correct? Safe assumption? So Bitcoin is an example of a public blockchain. And what that means is that you can see every transaction that took place, you just don't know who it's between, who's involved. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you have a private blockchain where you can't see, you know who you're dealing with, but you can't see any of the, you can only see what you're permitted to see within the transactions. So those are really two polar opposite ideas. The idea of anonymity, which you have in the public blockchain, and the idea of privacy that you have in a private blockchain. So just as we cut to the chase in terms of the M&E use cases, there's two really different uses of the technology. One is around supply chain and the idea of being able to use a private permissioned blockchain so that parties who traditionally don't necessarily have direct access or trust to shared information have a mechanism to do that. And the other is when you're starting to talk about the concept of tokenizing assets and trading assets in a marketplace. Ultimately, what blockchain is doing is it's removing business frictions and it's making it easier for buyers and sellers to transact. So IBM, just to be clear, we started investing heavily about 5 years ago in blockchain. We looked at Bitcoin and we said, hey, this underlying technology, not the cryptocurrency portion of it, but the part that allows you know, the core technology, which is a shared ledger system, that has properties of immutability. So anything that's written to that chain is there forever. The idea that there can be consensus in how that data is written to the chain. We thought, hey, this could actually create trust in shared information in business networks, and it could change the game for a lot of different business models. But just to be clear, we have not been heavily involved in cryptocurrency. Well, we're not involved in cryptocurrency. We are involved in tokenization of assets or currencies, where it's a one-to-one representation of actual currencies. But we're not in that crypto game. So when you start hearing about all these ICOs and all of the activities going around that, we're working more on sort of the underlying technical aspects that are pertinent for enterprises. So within that, again, so the idea here, the root of blockchain is a shared ledger system. The idea of a private blockchain is that you have to be invited in. So you're invited in, everybody in that blockchain understands who you are, there is governance around it in terms of how you can participate, what you're allowed to see, and what transactions you're allowed to be a part of. Anybody familiar with stored procedures? So it's just basically code that lives in traditional databases. So the idea here is in a traditional business, contracts exist discreetly between all the parties in a business network. Within blockchain, you have the ability to have a piece of code, a smart contract, that's automatically run. So you know, if Ethan has bananas and Steve has grapes, they can have a smart contract in the middle that says, you know, what the conversion is from bananas to grapes. And of course, one of the core concepts here as well is consensus. So the idea is within these permission blockchains, there's governance and there's agreed upon rules for how data is validated before it's written to the chain. So traditionally, the business problem here is we all know how business works today, where there's individual ledgers. And the reason that's a problem is that as you're transacting anything, so if I sell a good to an intermediary, the intermediary sells it to a retailer sells it to the consumer, all of those individual transactions have their own ledger systems. It causes causes delays in the process, and because everybody has duplicative information, it adds inefficiency in the system and the possibility for fraud to be inserted in any of those transactions, or even human error. So the simple change with blockchain is now we're allowing everybody to share a common ledger. Now, seems pretty like a pretty small change, but you know, now that if you can have workflows and mechanisms to make sure that everybody within a business network accepts the truth within that ledger system, it can change a lot of things, and we'll get into exactly what it's going to change in a few minutes. So what is blockchain? What isn't it? So I hear, so as I go to a number of conferences, I go to roundtables, you have a lot of ideas that tend to get conflated with blockchain. So blockchain is really a shared ledger system with some derivative technologies and efficiencies around it. But what it's done is gotten people thinking about some really exciting things, about how supply chains can work better, about how maybe they should have been constructed originally. And you see this really kind of interesting thing where people are talking about use cases or technologies that aren't necessarily blockchain that may be inspired by blockchain because now you're talking about a business process change, or they may be made better or augmented by the use of blockchain technology. But you know, first I'll start with, it's not everything. So blockchain is not like a magic solution that will change everything. You implement blockchain and tomorrow your entire business is going to be transformed. It's not a silver bullet. So you're going to see, as I said, we're pre-baby walking at this stage. So we're going to see a lot of things really need to change, and the way that people are collaborating around information has to sort of be reformed before you're going to see the major impacts of blockchain. And then the other thing I want to make sure I'm clear about specifically as it pertains to advertising is we're not looking at real-time use cases. So today, given the fact that Ethereum can do in the tens of transactions per second, even Hyperledger, which is what IBM built on, can do in the thousands of transactions per second, at least on the horizon, we're not going to be able to capture the millions and billions of impressions, certainly millions of impressions per second in programmatic advertising, and be able to integrate that into real-time bidding exchanges. What we can do is get insights on a trailing audit that become that allow us through analytics and information to inform business process. So, but that being said, blockchain is a very big deal. So the way it's being sold is over here. So it's the flying city, right? It's gonna change everything overnight. But I like to see it, and I challenge you to think of it more as like the building of the railroad. So think in black and white here. So the buildings of the Transcontinental Railroad completely transformed this country. It's transformed Europe as well. The insight here is that trade is the number one wealth creator. And by simply building new lines of trade or lines of access, you're really creating entirely new value systems. And so if you look at a city like Denver in the West, that could not have existed before you built the rail line. So the reason I think it is a big deal is if you think about it more simply, you're just thinking about now ways of enterprises communicating around trusted information on shorter timeframes or time cycles have enormously huge business impacts. So what do I mean specifically by that? IBM, we created a joint venture with Maersk, which is the global shipping company. 90% of the world's goods are in some way impacted by overseas shipments. And yet 200 pieces of paperwork and 30 entities might be responsible for a single container of flowers going from Madagascar to Europe. Incredibly inefficient supply chain. Just by the act of digitizing that, so getting all the different suppliers along that chain to agree to sharing their information on a trusted ledger system, having that information validated and available, is actually, as simple as it is as sort of a concept, is transformational. The World Trade Organization, personally, I think it's funny. So the first time I was exposed to this was through a video, and it's like a 3-minute video. And at the end, they kind of have this throwaway line, which is, oh, and the World Trade Organization looked at this use case and said that if it can be deployed globally at scale, it'll have a 5% overall positive impact on world GDP. Like, okay, so $3.5 trillion use case. So, and that's before you're talking about the bells and whistles and flying city stuff of all the AI and automation that's going to happen in that. That's just by taking the inefficiency out of the system that's caused today by delays and fraud. So if you think of it like the rail lines, this technology is a very, very big deal. So blockchain for advertising. Now I'm going to unpack this slide. It's a little bit of an eye chart. But this is really, I think, the closest that I've seen to a real framework for how this is going to work in the advertising industry. Now, to unpack it conceptually here, there's really two broad use cases that are categories of use cases that we're addressing. One is the supply chain, and the other is around identity and targeting. Now, if we first start with the supply chain, the advertising industry is notorious for the inefficiency in the system. So we're talking about now, particularly in digital and programmatic, 60 cents on the dollar is spent on intermediaries, remediation, fraud, before it reaches the publisher. So, and you would think, okay, well, that would be acceptable if that 60 cents was, if we're buying performance. And yet, I think 75% of all ads are viewed for less than a second. There's a proliferation of ad blockers. This industry is really broken in a lot of ways. And, it sort of arrived at this way organically in that you had platforms on the demand side that started aggregating, advertisement on behalf of the buyers. You had the same thing that happened on the sellers, and they've just started arbitraging against each other. And they had all these sort of little band-aids that got put in the supply chain, and it sort of became this unwieldy mess. But really, there's some fundamental problems of transparency in the supply chain. CMOs typically don't know, in programmatic especially, even what they bought, let alone what the performance was of their dollar. There's a famous saying that, I know that 50% of my advertising is working, I just don't know which half. So there's a ton of problems here, and also just in terms of reconciliation. So there's an accepted 10% discrepancy that's acceptable by the IAB in terms of what the two sides of the supply chain can report on how many ads that were viewable per the contract were displayed. So not controversial at all to say that this is a really broken supply chain. So how are we gonna address this? First of all, again, looking at this, is that the reason these are layered on top of each other is if you think about starting at the base level, that this is pedantically blockchain. And we'll get into exactly what the use cases are here, but the idea here is this is data that per accepted consensus across a business network is being written to a shared distributed ledger. And then as you go up, you have each of these solutions requires a more robust data and systems architecture, and each of these becomes less blockchain. So that they rely, and each one relies on the data or is improved by the data on the layer below. So the first layer, we're talking about really just tracking data around the lifecycle of a media buy. So you have an insertion order that is that has the rules by which an advertiser agrees that a publisher will be paid, how many pixels are viewable for how long, for example, and just within that layer, getting all of the data from the demand side and supply side platforms that today the IAB accepts as a 10% discrepancy, and one trusted system is really transformational in being able to address the labor and inefficiency related to reconciliation, to be able to provide an audit trail that just really doesn't exist, it's certainly on short time cycles today, to automate payments, and then also to start to be able to, once these discrepancies exist, be able to remediate them on very short. Today, sometimes you might have a tagging issue or you might have fraud, and it might be 45 days before you've discovered that happened. So if I have a movie that's opening this Friday and 12% of my ads weren't delivered, and I discovered that after the movie opened, that didn't get those butts in the seats. So that's the first layer. The second layer is around supply chain transparency. So first of all, note as well, this first layer applies across all of the different mediums of advertising, digital, linear, out of home, cinema, radio, et cetera. This level of transparency is missing in the industry, and blockchain is a really good solution for that. The next, all the layers above are all related to digital programmatic. And so in terms of digital programmatic, today the overall digital advertising business is roughly $220 billion globally. I'll note that between 60 and 70% of that is two companies, Google and Facebook. But most estimates of growth, say in the next 5 years, the part of digital, the 220 that's actually programmatic, meaning it's automated by technology, is roughly $70 billion. Most estimates say that the overall digital market is going to be closer to $400 billion in 5 years, and the portion of that that will be programmatic will be up to about $240 billion. So we're having massive growth in this market. So everything from the second layer up is really specifically related to the digital ad market. So in this second layer, we're talking about supply chain transparency. So today, an advertiser really has no way to understand who they paid, what they paid, and how that related to performance. So what we're talking about at this layer is being able to abstract the fees that are paid from the media, meaning how much the publisher got, so that you can start to calculate things like a working media, a WCPM, which is what was the performance of my media relative to the fees that I paid. And so ultimately, the end game there is that once you start to have better transparency about who is paid what, how that related to performance, you can start to optimize for delivery of all of your campaigns across the broad supply network. And oftentimes, you'll have a campaign that runs on thousands of publishing sites. So when that becomes possible, you can index towards the highest performing, highest trusted media and away from the low performing, low trusted. And part of this as well is up to 20% of all digital ads are in some way subject to fraud. So there's some things. Another thing we can do at this layer is to build identity into the network. So now you can understand who all the entities in the supply chain are, and therefore you can start to maintain things like trust scores. So if somebody appended an ad tag and then eventually that site starts pointing towards a bot network, we know who did that. And so we know in the future that we can steer away from that person. So, and then conversely, if the publishers were to start to put information on the blockchain around who they targeted and their response, eventually you could see this. There's a set of users who have been doing people-y things over years that look like trusted users. So if you have a particular publishing network that shows a higher index of untrusted suspect traffic, you know that there might be fraud within that network. So there's a number of ways that blockchain helps in terms of recording that information. So another thing with that layer as well is the possibility for performance payments, because we talked about the idea of a smart contract. So what becomes possible there is an advertiser can enter into a direct deal or an agency on behalf of the advertiser with a publisher saying that based upon the KPIs or response to a campaign, you'll get paid on a sliding scale. So that incents the publisher to start participating and sharing data so that those optimizations can happen. And so this becomes sort of a facilitator of being able to create new coalitions of data and AI. Which brings us into the next layer, which is really around algorithmic targeting. So this is where the end goal, so the biggest problem on the marketing side, and this is where Google and Facebook are problematic for the marketing industry, is that the CMO wants to have optimal allocation of their entire marketing budget for the purpose of reaching the consumers that are most likely to buy their goods or services. Without information from the supply chain, they're not able to make those calculations. So the opacity is really hurting them at the enterprise level, at the CFO level. And this is a big problem. There's a lot of activist investors, as we are you see people like the CMO of Procter & Gamble, Mark Pritchard, who's been very hard on reforms, pushing for reforms in the supply chain. And conversely, on the publishing side, the broadcaster side, you want optimal yield across your entire industry. When you look across all of the levers of yield are inventory, allocation, and pricing. You want to make sure that based upon knowledge of who your audience is in response to campaigns and the value of your audience is that you're maximizing that. So the idea is to be able to understand who your users are and who your highest value customers are and all the rules to be able to target the right person on the right platform at the right time to maximize the value and the response to the campaign. So there is a science around being able to take information about your known users, compile it with a data store of other information. This was very interesting around this morning with the movie pass. So this is kind of that idea of if you can take that movie pass data and you can combine it with other data sets, that becomes very good at understanding what users might be most receptive to a specific movie's campaign on which platforms. Then you get this next layer, which is, I think, going to be the big transformational thing that's going to happen in this industry. It's around the idea of a federated data co-op. So today, I've seen estimates that if you took all the world's quality first-party deterministic data that exists outside of Google and Facebook, it would be 8 times the order of magnitude of what's in Google and Facebook. Not to diminish the data of Google and Facebook, it's phenomenal. But if all of that could be pooled and leveraged, it would be, it would at least be a counterbalance to Google and Facebook. The reason that's not happening is because just look at how this industry arose. It's the demand side and the supply chain arbitraging against each other. Anybody who shared data, if it were transparent, they would arbitrage on each other's data all day long. They'd poach each other's customers. Your edge at maintaining your data would be diminished. However, what's possible with blockchain and blockchain-related technologies is the ability to pool data where there's permitted access, and only the people who have permission to see specific data are allowed to see it, but the machine learning and AI can see across it and optimize across it. So if you combine the algorithmic targeting layer, which is emboldened by AI, and the ability to have a data co-op with encrypted data, now you really truly have the ability to counterbalance Google and Facebook. Now, I mentioned the two uses of the technology. One is around the supply chain and private permission blockchains and being able to get better trust in the data that's being shared and leveraged. At this level, another use of the technology is tokenizing assets. So think about this, what is going to happen, and we're starting to work with customers actively around this now, when you're tokenizing data. So you're combining data in an encrypted marketplace, you're tokenizing it, you can combine it in ways that you can predict are gonna have the highest effect against specific campaigns, and then you're able to create a liquid marketplace for that data where the value of that data can be calculated through analytics, and the marketplace can start to essentially have a transparent Google Facebook outside of Google Facebook. So we launched a really something that's very transformational. So who's familiar with MediaOcean? Okay, so MediaOcean, for those who don't know, any media buy that's done by an agency in the United States, Europe, South America, China, Australia, is done through their media planning, buying, and financial software. They do $140 billion worth of ad buys go through their system annually and growing. So we launched a blockchain. We've sort of centered around advertisers who wanted transparency that isn't present today in terms of the life cycle of a media buy. So our own brand, IBM's brand, is participating as a customer in this. We also have Pfizer, Unilever, Kimberly-Clark, Kellogg's, AT&T, Budweiser, and Johnson & Johnson. We just had our kickoff last week. And what we're doing is we're looking at the entire life cycle of the media buy, starting with the advertiser. When they budget for a campaign, it's authorized by the agency, a PO is issued, it gets budgeted, the publisher provides a proposal, there's an order that then ends up being executed, there's invoicing and payments. We're taking all of that through a series of individual transactions with specific consensus workflows, and we're writing that to the blockchain. And only the parties within that are allowed to see certain information are allowed to see it within that construct. But the end result is the advertiser can now dashboard where all of their campaigns are in real time. So what has been budgeted, what's been ordered, what's been billed, what's been settled. As simple as that seems, going back to the rail lines analogy or the Maersk example, that's really transformational for this industry. Because once you've established that basic timeline of truth, you can begin to leverage that data in other ways that move up that the series of layers that I showed on the previous slide. So just in terms of who's participating, so in this consortium that we launched and this pilot that we're going to be running through the rest of the year, I mentioned the advertisers that are in it. All the holding companies are participating as well. We also have several of the large ad tech providers that are going to be participating, and we're also going to have a few publishers, and we're still recruiting publishers on here. So the benefits to the publishers are it's going to cut down on those reconciliation costs and labor costs. It provides fee transparency, because the publishers are really losing out. They're the only one. They're only getting 40 cents on the dollar from the advertiser. So this allows them to understand who they're paying and what the impacts of those costs are on performance. And there's also some benefits down on the roadmap around being able to create more efficient payment and settlements. So just closing again, so back to David Sarnoff. The lesson for me, what I think is so interesting about him is that, you know, again, we're seeing with blockchain that so much of what's being talked is inspired by blockchain, but it's not really about the technology itself. It's business transformation. It's the ability to combine other technologies with this innovation of the shared trust and shared ledger system. But the thing, there's going to be ways the industry, there's a CEO of MadHive. Does anybody know MadHive? Good friends with those guys. Adam Helfgott, their CEO, says, you know, if you move from an analog to a digital clock, you can't just take a transistor and put it on an analog clock and it makes it, you know, that's not the innovation. You have to create a new clock around the transistor and a digital clock. So I think that the lesson here with blockchain is that so many of the things that are going to change the industry are going to rely on our thinking about that next thing. Like Sarnoff thought about, we had this peer-to-peer, one-to-one relationship. What if we went one-to-many? So I think one of the things specifically this industry is going to look at in the next few months is, can it start to create that data co-op? Can there be a means of there being a tokenized market or a marketplace for tokenized assets that's done in an encrypted marketplace? And what impacts? So we need a new protocol for the way that data is exchanged that, you know, is in opposition to the open RTB standard, for example. So think outside of the box. This industry, this moment, you in the room, are the next pioneers of this technology. And just like you couldn't have known back when, you know, Sarnoff was dealing with the wireless telegraph and that it would become all the technologies that we work with today, you know, we're at a moment and an inflection point with this technology where, you know, we have the ability to make the future.
Chad. Thank you. I mean, that was...